Hello, everyone. Thank you again for joining us. Looking at my calendar here, it's April 26th, and even though it's already the time for the next night, it's the 29th day of the Omer on my calendar. I listen to the talks afterwards, and I have a pen because I write down things that I want to point out, which I forgot to mention. That's what we do with the first 15 minutes, and that's even 20 minutes. So as long as I did that, let me point out something interesting that we think in our minds, we think hold on a second, let me get the page that I need to show you. We think not Jewish. We're thinking in terms of how can I like in Europe they would think Yiddish. We think American, so we'll say like Thursday night or we don't think Jewishly. So what do I mean by that? I'll show you an example of how you see in the Shulchan Aruch even that the Ramosha Isserles makes a mistake grammatically, not even grammatically, words, because he's thinking Yiddish. And it's the halachas that apply this year, that apply Pesach. If you look in Simon Kuf Nun Hey, actually, I don't need my big Shulchan Aruch here. I got it on the screen. They're speaking about the halacha, the laws of leaving water overnight, that they used to knead the bread, the matzah, every single day. So they say you have to take the water from the previous day, and then it stays overnight, and then you can use it the next night. So if you look in the Ramah here, it asks the question, so what do you do, let's say, Sunday? The first day of Pesach is Sunday, like this year. So the 15th of Nisan would be Sunday. When do you take the water? You can't take it. You don't take it. There's a reason why they say they don't take it Friday afternoon. So they say you take it Thursday night because they you'd want to need the matzah Motzei Shabbos. So what is? I don't need to get into the details of the halacha, but just here, look what the Ramah says. Kishachal Pesach be'echad b'Shabbos. When Pesach comes out on Sunday, that's the 15th of Nisan. That's what we had this year. Yesh lishov, you draw the water, or Yud Gimel. That is, you draw it the night of the 13th. So that would be Thursday night because 15th is Sunday, 14th is Shabbos, 13th is Friday. So Or Yud Gimel, just so we say Or Arba Asaros. But look what the Ramah says. You draw the water Or Yud Gimel the night of the 13th, Dehainu B'Leil Chamishi, which is, he's saying Thursday night. However, that's not what Leil Chamishi means in Hebrew. What does Leil Chamishi mean? Leil Chamishi means Wednesday night. Friday night is Leil Shishi. But the Rama is thinking Yiddish, like we would think American. He's thinking Thursday night. Donnerstag, in German, you say Donnerstag Nacht. So I guess it's Donnerstag Nacht. So he's thinking Thursday night, Donnerstag Nacht. That's the fifth, Leil Chamishi. But it's not. It's actually Leil Shishi. And then, of course, you have a Friday night is Leil Shabbat. So here's an example, and there's numerous examples of these. In fact, Rabbi Mazuz has a whole list of them, where Ashkenazic authorities, because of their usage of Yiddish, actually got it wrong Hebraically because they were thinking Yiddish. So Leil Chamishi here means Thursday night, but that's not how you say Thursday night. You say Leil Shishi because, as we know, the day starts in the night. So let me just quickly, in the time we have, show you, repeat a few, th not repeat, comment on a few things. Well, since Rabbi Kelman mentioned the India thing, this is also relevant. In one of the big Haredi websites, Kikar Shabbat, it talks about the terrible situation in India. And there's like one Chabad shliach, he's still left there. So there's a whole story about him, and obviously it's very sad, and we have to feel sad even for what I'm going to show you. But what you read about it is, why is he still there? Betchilas haMagefa, at the beginning of the Magefa, we sent a letter to the Rebbe, and vikibalnu ha'ra'ah brura lo lazov et makom hashlichut, and we received clear instructions not to leave where we were. And he says, that's what we did. We stayed. But now things have got so worse. Shalachtu michtav l'Rebbe, vikibalnu tshuva al ma'atash Eretz Yisrael. We got the answer back where he spoke about, the greatness of Eretz Yisrael, and we understood the message that we have to go to Israel, leave here. So I mean, come on here. This is exactly what I was talking about. You have to look, I feel sad because I think these people, they have such mesiras nefesh, but they're not all there. And you're dealing with people who live like in a dream world, an illusion world. But if you read the comments on this, which are from Litvish and Hasidic, it's like some of the comments are very harsh, like these idiots and all that. I have a different perspective. I feel very sad that you have people living under these illusions that they communicate with the Rebbe back and forth. Now, how do they communicate? Because they either open up the Igros, or if you go in India, you can send online. You send a message, and they have some system they've worked out where the computer looks in the Igros of the Rebbe, and it gives it back to you. So they think they're communicating with the Rebbe. As we pointed out 2 weeks ago, the letter of the responsum of Dr. Montalto, and had a couple comments, you know, could he have really written the responsum as he's a doctor? When does he have time to become such a Talmud Chacham? It was just this week I remembered that there's this work. It was published in America, I think in 1922. And this rabbi, he's not a rabbi, he's a doctor. Rofe Lamachalot As Tumcha, I think that's stomach ailments. So here you have a long tshuva, I think it's 70 pages from the Sehuda Yochim, Dr. Goldberg. And if you go on the Hebrew journals, Torah journals that appeared in America in the first part of the 20th century, he has a number of Torah articles. So there you have also someone of a doctor who's a real Talmud Chacham. I'm not saying he's one of the Gedolei Yisrael in America, but definitely a Talmud Chacham, fine Talmud Chacham. Last class, so we spoke about Rabbi Yaakov Yellen. He raised the issue of Yudel Rosenberg, and I'm going to get back to a little later bit later to, we'll say one more thing about, or two more things about the Eshkol in a few minutes. Here's a picture, incidentally, I found there's a lot of pictures of Yudel Rosenberg. And we were giving his children and descendants. Here's one, by the way, a great-grandson, which no one mentioned. And I didn't want to, time was up already. Rabbi Shlomo Brody, his father was Baruch Brody. He runs, and Rabbi Kelman's daughter was in this as well. I know the Tikva Institute in Israel. If you know what Tikva is, if when you want to take a break from the Torah in Motion lectures and Shiurim, you can listen to Tikva. They have lots of great stuff. And he runs Tikva in Israel for the yeshiva students and maybe even college students there. And he's written a number of things. He published a book it shows here, you know, The Guide to the Complex, Contemporary Halachic Debates, which National Jewish Book Award finalist. I knew his father, Rabbi Baruch Brody. He might've also had smich, I don't know. And recently Shlomo Brody in the last Chakira wrote this very interesting article, "May Parents Waive the Requirements of Avelos," because he tells the whole story that his father said to him he doesn't want him to be an Avel, he just wants him to say Kaddish. But after Shloshim, he wants him to be able to resume his life, go to Simchas, all these things. And I had no idea about any of this. I don't think anyone does. But the standard halachic position is that if a parent is Mochel, you don't need to be an Avel after 30 days. And anyone who's interested in this, it's a very fascinating article all about this, the halachas. We spoke about Rabbi Riskin and his story, and Rabbi Kelman suggested everyone listen to the interview with Rabbi Riskin at Torah in Motion, which I did in the car the next day. And I also have his, in writing, Rabbi Riskin wrote about this. I actually had forgotten an important point, so let me just tell you the point, or I didn't get the details exactly. We were speaking about Mechitza. Rabbis taking shuls with a heter. I mentioned the Rav Schechter gave a heter to one of the YU guys to take this position in Denver. I said he gave him a permanent heter. I didn't mean permanent as in forever. I don't know how many years he told him. I meant as opposed to, like we said, those Rosh Hashanah shtelas. But Rabbi Riskin published this book. It's called Listening to God, Inspirational Stories for My Grandchildren. And it really is, it's mostly an autobiography. Almost all of it's an autobiography. And he tells the whole story. And exactly what we said, that he was asked to this shul, which is a conservative shul, but he didn't want to take it because it didn't have a machitza. And the Rav agreed he shouldn't take it. And then Dr. Belkin said he should take it. And then the Rav changed his mind after Dr. Belkin spoke to him. So that's what we said last week. And I said that Rabbi Riskin, though, who was quite frum, he didn't want to take the, he didn't want to daven in the shul. That's actually not what happened. The story is the Rav brings him in and the Rav tells him you should take it. And the Rav sees that Riskin is not so crazy about taking it. So the Rav says to him, it was the Rav's idea, which he never said to anyone else, but as far as I know, but he knew that Riskin himself was not comfortable with it. So the Rav said to him, take the position, but three stipulations. Don't move by Lincoln Square. Stay in Washington Heights. Just go for Shabbos. Next, don't take any payment for when you work there. And third, that he should daven early and not daven with them. Just lead the service. So that was actually Rav Soloveitchik who suggested this. Incidentally, for a reason I'm not sure, Riskin writes, and he says it also in the interview, that even though the Rav's his Rebbe, he still wasn't 100% sure. He went to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And it was only after the Lubavitcher Rebbe also said do it that he went ahead and did it. And you can read all about how this became a big scandal. The Jewish Observer, I won't even say a blessed memory, not a blessed memory, picked up on this and they used it to attack. They didn't even bother calling up and saying, why are you doing this? Did you get a header? No, they just used it to attack Riskin and attack these young YU rabbis. And it's par for the course for that former newspaper. But you can read all about it in Rabbi Riskin's memoir here. There's also another book. Here's another one. Circle in the Square by Shlomo Riskin Reinvents the Synagogue, which also tells the story, but with interviews of other people. And I learned from here on page 84 that the founder of the shul, Danny Mars, he had no idea that Rabbi Riskin was not davening with them. And it says he was later hurt when he found out that he hadn't been praying with them. So this is something that they didn't even know about in the shul. One of you asked me last class what time in Stockholm Asara Batavis is. So this year coming up, if you're going to be there, the fast begins at 6:06 and ends 3:43. So it's not just 2 hours. Let me say three more things about the Sefer Eshkol, and then we're going to pick up with where we left off, because I got a lot of pushback by people, and I'll read you one of them. I was trying to be very even-handed and trying to say, well, maybe there was a manuscript which of unknown authorship that he came into contact with at Rabbi Auerbach and therefore published the work. And the pushback I got is, and we're talking from in the Haredi world, absolutely not. We all know that it's a forgery, that he forged it. I went online. I haven't checked this out in a long time. My articles on this was a long time ago. You can go in the Otzer Chachma forum, and everyone assumes, I'm talking about in the Haredi world, that he forged it, and he was a great Talmud Chacham. He wouldn't have been taken in by something like that. He also was a big fighter against the Reform. I'm trying to be Melamed Tzchus. I would go with the scholars that assume that he did forge it, but that's, I was a little surprised, the pushback. Let me just read you a couple things here. Rev Aryeh Leib, he writes to me a funny story that he was in a shul. Let me read it to you here. He says as follows. He heard this from a descendant of the Nachal Eshkol, Rafi Orbach. He was that Professor Shalom Albeck, the grandson, sent his children to Chorev, where Rafi Orbach was a teacher, and a daughter of Professor Albeck was in Auerbach's class. Rav Auerbach told the daughter to relate to her father that she is studying by a descendant of the Nachal Eshkol, and there's nothing he can do about it. And then he writes that in my small shul of 60 mispalalim, I once had sitting within 10 feet of me three young, sweet, and innocent Haredi children. One was an Albeck, another was a Hoffman, and a third was a descendant of Rabbi Auerbach. I was very tempted to take a picture of them playing together, but it was Shabbos. And he goes on. And, one of you asked me, because I quoted Rabbi Marmorstein, that says he doesn't know what Birkas Ilanos to do. what version? So what was that all about? Well, if you look in the Art Scroll Siddur, with the brachos, it tells you that upon seeing fruit trees in bloom during the spring, this blessing, you recite this blessing. So what's the version of the blessing? Well, every single version of the blessing in the Rishonim reads as follows. Shalom, says Baruch Atah Hashem, Alkeinu Melech Haolam, Shalom Chiser Ba'olamo Klum. And then it goes on, Varo Lobrios Tovos. Rav Zalman Hanau, who dies in 1746, he made a lot of changes to the Siddur. He changed this, made it more biblical. So not Shalom Chiser Ba'olamo Klum, he made it Shalom Chiser Ba'olamo Davar. And that's what the Art Scroll Siddur has. No Rishon has that. Lo and behold, in the Sefer Eshkol, you have that. Shalom Chiser Ba'olamo Davar. So there's a sort of an example that you can date with the Sefer Eshkol that we have. It has to be post Zalman Hanau. Okay, that's enough for the Eshkol. Let us move on to where we left off. Exciting stuff. I see I have one more thing on my desk here. I want to tell you one more famous thing you remember about the Eshkol, and you can tell this in your shul. We have someone in my shul, he's a real stickler for this. He doesn't know, as far as I know, that the first person to make a stink about this is the Eshkol. But if you look in the introduction to the Eshkol, page 7, he mentions that there's a big problem. Everyone, if they want to talk about the Torah reader, they call him a Baal Kori. If they want to talk about the person who blows the shofar, it's the Baal Tokea. And he goes on how this doesn't make any sense. A Baal Shor is a Baal Shor. That's not the Shor. That's not the animal. It's the one who owns the animal. Baal Habor is not the boar. It's not the pit. It's the one who owns the pit. And therefore, and Baal Tokea is not the Tokea. So you're supposed to say Baal, let's say Baal Korea or something like that. That's what he points out. The last thing we're dealing with is Rabbi Zevin. The fascinating Rabbi Zevin, who we spoke a bit about. I set the stage to responsum number 157, page 335, the problem, the forgery. Rabbi Aryeh Leib, who points out correctly, I said that this holder, he translated. He was the editor. On the title page, it gives the translator's name. His name is Ashrei, Shlomo Fox Ashrei. And Mayor Holder is the, it says, contributing editor. But he's the one who was responsible for the censorship. Because that's what Rabbis Nassim Sherman and Zlatowicz told us. Rabbi Aryeh Leib actually knew him. He thinks he was probably just done for money, whatever. I discussed the whole story. I want to now read for you what Rabbi Rappaport says. Rabbi Aryeh Leib also didn't like the story that one of you mentioned in the comments about Rav Zevin and writing this book, Hasidic Stories of the Parsha. And when a Litvish Rav asked him, Rav Zevin replied, did it to make money. And I just assume that's a joke Rav Zevin's making. It doesn't, nothing serious. So I say that to you, Rabbi Elay, but thank you for your comment. So let me read to you what Rabbi Rappaport says, summarize it for you, which is, this is in print, really, the most detailed discussion of this unfortunate episode. First, Rabbi Rappaport begins with the relationship to the State of Israel of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I mentioned last class that Rabbi Zevin, who was Chabad, but not Lubavitch, although he was very close to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, he was involved in sending up the Chabad Beis Din. He was a quasi-Lubavitcher, but he didn't give up his independence entirely to have a different position. Rabbi Rappaport tells us that when it comes, of course, and we know this, how to relate to the State of Israel, there's views from the Rachok mi Mizrach Amarav, you know, from right to left. The Lubavitcher Rebbe's position was a little complicated, as Rabbi Rappaport mentions. On the one hand, the Rebbe said that we have to be thankful that God gave a place that the Jews can go and that God saved them through Nisim, for miracles. On the other hand, we're very upset, he says, that the people who run the state are not doing it in a Torah way. Also, I would just add that the Rebbe well, he wasn't the Rebbe then, but the Chabad Rebbes opposed the creation of a state. So, of course, the idea that Jews would have a place to go, but it could be ruled by the British. But they did not believe in a state. But once the state is declared, then you have to be extremely supportive of it, and because you have to deal with the situation the way it is. Now, for the issue of doing Kriya, of ripping your shirt when you see the cities of Judah and Jerusalem, remember, that's where Zevin was speaking about, where you wouldn't need to today. Rabbi Rapport tells us that the Rebbe's position was clear that you do have to do Kriya. So today, if you ride and you ride past one of the old cities, well, obviously it would apply to cities in Yehudah and Shomron, but even in across the Green Line, but even in regular Israel proper, cities that would go back, Modi'in, I guess, something like that, you still would do Kriya. I don't know, not every time, but you come the first day, I guess you do Kriya. Jerusalem, you do Kriya, because according to the Rebbe, the establishment of the state of Israel has no significance at all in terms of changing halacha. Now, I looked up he cites the source where the Rebbe says this. The Rebbe doesn't explain why yet, but I think the reason is, and Shamaria, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is because the people running the state of Israel are not observant. It's not run in a Torah fashion. Therefore, it does, in an official Torah fashion, therefore, it doesn't change this. That's not regarded as Jewish rule. Remember, if it's Jewish rule, then we don't need to do Kriya. That's what the Rebbe says. Well, I know Chabadnikim. I even was together with a Chabadnik that I know in Jerusalem about 5 years ago. And I know for a fact that they don't do Kriya. And I asked Rabbi Rappaport about this. And he told me that, quote, the vast majority of Lubavitchers do not do this, even though the Rebbe himself said you're supposed to. And the upshot of this is, which I didn't know, that this is what he told me, and then I confirmed it with others, and we have a few Lubavitchers listening, you can confirm it as well, that there are many, well, let me take that, not many, there are certain things that the Lubavitcher Rebbe said, and nevertheless, the Lubavitcher Hasidim do not do. I don't know how to explain this. Shamaria or Lubavitcher, who's with us, who listens to us and sends good comments, you can explain what's going on here. If the Rebbe said that this is what you should do, why is it that the Hasidim don't listen? We know that there's things they don't, that in the Shulchan Aruch Harav they don't do also. But here we're talking about Rav Nachum Mendel Schneerson, who says explicitly, and yet all Rabbi Rapport says is that not everything advocated by the Rebbe was adopted by the Hasidim. So when I asked a couple people about this, I don't get any good answer. I just get an answer. Well, you know, not everyone feels that everything, this is what I was told, is they think that not everything the Rebbe said was said halacha l'maisa. That he's giving it as an option or something pious to do, but not required. But in this case, if you look at it, the Rebbe's pretty clear. But they assume it's not halacha l'maisa. If any Lubavitchers want to, and I know I'll hear from Shamaria next week, but it is interesting. Then Rabbi Rappaport goes on you see now what the Rebbe says, and Rabbi Rapport's a chassid of the Rebbe. So what I'm going to say now to you is only explaining Rav Zevin's position, but don't assume that I advocate it because I hold of the Rebbe. And he says that we need to speak truth because in my opinion, hasiluf ha-sanzura, the distortions and the censorship, he says, inan adarcha shel Torah. This is not the way of Torah. And the truth is to be loved. And he quotes Rav Moshe Feinstein, what I saw last week, that Rav Moshe Feinstein says in the Igros Moshe, today, Shebechasti Hashem, with God's mercy, the non-Jews do not rule over Ari Yehuda Val Yerushalayim. So you see, and then he goes on, when the cities of Israel are... Atah, we said today, he says, that we hope the Mashiach will come when all the cities of Israel will be put, you know, properly. But today, she'ain sarach likroa. You don't need to do Kriya. But when you see the Makom HaMikdash, in which we know that this can only be by Melech HaMashiach, there you have to do Kriya. So Rav Moshe Feinstein held you don't do Kriya, only on the Makom HaMikdash. And then Rabbi Rapport says that... he quotes another passage of Rav Moshe. He says in Igros Moshe, if you go today to Eretz Yisrael, also use the same word as Rav Zevin, Mistaber. He says it makes sense that even though we don't have the Messianic redemption, Ainli Kroa B'riyat Yerushalayim. We don't do Kriya. Why? Shehi Bechesed Hashem Yisparach Banuya L'Tiferes, because it's built up beautifully. Ve'ena B'rishus Ilmos. And it's not under the control of the nations. And of course, Rabbi Rappaport points out that Rav Moshe Feinstein's not he's not at Tzioni. But this is, what does this have to do with being at Tzioni? This is just recognizing the fact that the non-Jews don't control it. This is a halachic matter. So the first point that Rabbi Rappaport makes, that this is complete nonsense to think that this is the Zionist thing. It's not at all. Then he points out what things that I mentioned. Rav Zevin reprinted this sefer so many times, he never touched it. Then he gets into the question, well, Rabbi Sherman in Zlotowitz says that this holder who knows the family of Rav Zevin very well, and he never would make any alterations without the approval of, being certain that Rav Zevin would have wanted this. What does Rabbi Rappaport say? Rabbi Rappaport says that we can't ask Mr. Holder because unfortunately he's passed away. There's a question then. Why does Mr. Holder, who also printed the Hebrew volumes, he never changed those? If you're going to tell me Rav Zevin changed his mind, it's a little strange because until Rav Zevin passed away, he was printing these exactly the way they were. But nevertheless, Rabbi Rappaport says that you can't take this seriously, that Mr. Holder knew Rabbi Zevin's opinions, and therefore he decided to change them in accord with Rabbi Zevin's opinions later in life. And he goes through all the things that I mentioned, that he reprinted it all his time, etc. But then he says, and this is of interest, especially, he said, after going through all these pages about how, and citing from Rav Zevin, who at the end of his life spoke very positively about the state of Israel, he always was a Zionist. No one ever even denied this. This is what's very important. He says, nevertheless, Rabbi Rappaport's writing sarcastically. He says, despite all this, he says, I didn't feel enough confidence to levatel mesoratam shomar holder. And Rabbi Sherman and Zlotowitz, he's being sarcastic. He says, just based upon these facts, which I told you, I didn't feel like I could come and just reject, because the Masorah, you have to put Masorah in quotes when someone translates this, from Mr. Holder and from Rabbi Sherman and Zlotowitz, until I connected with the family of Rabbi Zevin to explore this matter. Namely, the family that Mr. Holder says that he was in, or Rabbi Sherman and Zlotowitz claim that he was in close contact with. And who's the family? Rabbi Nachum Zevin, Harav Lagon, Rav Nachum Zevin, who's the rabbi. You can call, any one of you can call him up. David Eisen, who's listening to us, called him up and spoke to him about a different issue. He's the Rav of the Shechuna Kiryas Eliezer in Haifa. He's a typical Haredi Rav. The Rabbi Zevin had a few children, two children, I think, and his son died in Rav Zevin's lifetime, and Rav Nachum inherited all the writings of Rav Zevin. He was the one who was closest to his grandfather, who weren't with his grandfather. He's the only one of the grandchildren who's a rabbi, Talmud Chacham. The others are lawyers, other things. And he is the one that sold Mr. Holder the rights to reprint the book in Hebrew and also in English. And so Rabbi Rappaport tells us, I had a telephone conversation. Any of you could have a conversation with him. I had a telephone conversation, he tells us, on Yud Dal Teves in 2004. And Rabbi Nachum Zevin said to me, clear language, Shalo Hayu Dvarim Elu Me'olam. It's all false. It's all phony. It never happened. We never told him that Rabbi Zevin changed his position or that he could alter the text. And he says, Rav Nachum Zevin gave me permission to publicize in his name the following. One, and remember, this is Rabbi Nachum Zevin, who's a Haredi Rav. Maybe inside he's a little Tzioni, but outside he's quasi-Haredi. Until his last day, Rabbi Zevin never budged from his strong positive feeling about the state of Israel, a position that's found in his writings, in his sayings, in his actions. And as an example, until his last year, in the last, the end of his life, Rav Zevin said Hallel without a bracha in brackets on Yom Ha'atzmaut and Yom Yerushalayim. So obviously the idea that he became disillusioned, etc. And remember, what we're talking about is simply the three words, Ashreinu Shezachinu Achach, that happy are we that we can see the state. We never heard from him that he changed his position about the chiyuv of doing, that is the lack of a chiyuv of doing kriya today. Not only that, he says, he didn't even know Rav Zevin that there is even any havamina to think that Rav Zevin changed his mind. And there was no one, he never even heard of such a concept that he would have changed his mind. And certainly he never spoke, lo davar v'chatzi davar. He never said a word about this, not to Mr. Holder, not to anyone from Art Scroll, anything. And now that the matter is clear, Rabbi Rapport says that we can see that Rav Zevin never changed his mind at all. Obviously, we all knew this, but this is important because it puts on the record the conversation with the family that, and remember, Rabbi Sherman and Zlotowicz knew nothing about this. The mini controversy breaks out. So what are they? They'd go to Mr. Holder and say, what's going on? Why'd you change the translation? He says, well, I knew Rabbi Zevin, and I can tell you that in the last years of his life, he wasn't so happy with the state of Israel, and therefore I took it out. And okay, that's we can completely reject this as a total falsehood. Not that it, and if it wasn't a falsehood, it doesn't give him the right to change it. Then Rabbi Rapport points out the interesting point that in the Talmud Bavli of the Schottenstein edition, Maseches Moed Katan, lo and behold, they have a discussion there about doing Kriya. And what do they say? They cite Rav Moshe Feinstein, who says that today you don't have to do Kriya. And they don't even mention any of the poskim who say that it still remains the practice, the halacha. So in the Art Scroll Talmud themselves, they adopt the so-called Tzioni perspective, which, as I said, is not really a Tzioni perspective. It's simply a basic halachic perspective. So it's all very strange, and it's unfortunate. It would have been so much better had Sherman and Zlotowicz simply said, we did not know about this. You're right. The next printing, we will rectify it. But they didn't, and the family says what they did is totally wrong. They have no rights to do this. They were not given any permission to change it. But what are you going to do? Rabbi Nachum Zevin's going to sue or something like that? It's not the, what can you do? You're dealing with Sheker, unfortunately. And what can we say? Oh, if you're a Talmud Chacham or you're Israeli, you're reading the Hebrew volume. So therefore, in the Hebrew volume, you see the original. It's only the people who unfortunately have to read it in English that they have to read the distorted version. That is Siman Kuf Nun Zion. It's actually a lengthy Siman. I'll tell you how many pages it was. So we just, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 6.5 pages. So it's a significant letter. Now we're up to Kuf Nun Chet, page 341. And this is the last letter from, oh, no, it's not the last letter. Sorry. This is a letter from, there's another one, Rav Svi Schechter. That's Rav Herschel Schechter. And the title of it is Concerning Rav Shaul Lieberman and the Hashkafa of the Outlook of Rabbi Gifter, Rav Mordechai Gifter. So this is why is he writing to me about this? Well, because I sent him my booklet, Shaul Lieberman and the Orthodox. Anyone who's interested in the topic, you can get it. I think it's on Amazon, $6. You can pick it up, or I can send it to you. He says to me as follows. I received the booklet, Shaul Lieberman and the Orthodox, and I read through it. Chaval, Chaim Kol Tragim. It's unfortunate. What a tragic life. I don't know. If you read the Shaul Lieberman Orthodox, I don't know. If I don't see it as a tragic life. You read the story of Rabbi Yechiyak of Weinberg, that the biography between Yeshiva and Man Orthodoxy, then I think it's tragic. I think a lot of people assume it's tragic. I don't really see it as tragic. It's complicated, but okay, maybe you see it as others people see as tragic. And then he says, the 10 years that I was in the shir of Rabbi Soloveitchik in Yeshiva University, he only mentioned Lieberman one time regarding the idea. And I will, in my classes on Lieberman, which I'm going to do when we finish this book, I'll tell you exactly where this comes from. It's actually from the Dead Sea Scrolls. That's what that's the source that Lieberman's citing. Shama Friedman has a whole talk on this. The story is as follows. He says it has to do with a Kohen who's not forbidden to come into contact with a Sheretz, a creepy crawly thing. And he tells the story. So let me just read you the story. It's in Nefesh HaRav of Rav Schechter on page 248. Rabbi Rakefet, in his book, The Rav, gives a little different version of it, which is from Rav Schechter is remembering it, unless it's twice he must have done it, because the classes that Rakefet has, those are from like public lectures. And Rabbi Schechter is reciting from a recording from in Shir. This is what Rav Schechter says. And I'll tell you a little bit of the differences that Rakefet has. He says, Rabbi Soloveitchik told us that once he met Rabbi Shaul Lieberman at a bris milah. And Lieberman pointed out to him that there's a tshuvas ga'onim. There's a tshuva in the ga'onim. Now, this point of tshuva ga'onim does not appear in Rakefet's. And if Shama Friedman is correct, and we don't have any tshuva ga'onim that says this, as far as I know, what we do have is Dead Sea Scrolls. And that's, so I think over the years, there's some confusion here. But this is what he says. In tshuvas ga'onim, it's important to know that it's tshuvas ga'onim for the story that he tells, even though I think actually it's not referring to the ga'onim, it's referring to a sectarian position. And he pointed out that, Lieberman pointed out, does the tshuvas ga'onim say that a Kohen is Muzhar af betumas nevela, that is, a Kohen can't come into contact with a dead animal. And what did Rabbi Soloveitchik reply? He says, you don't have to pay attention to this at all, because it's certainly against the halacha mekubelet. It's against the accepted halacha. Of course it's against the accepted halacha. The Gemara tells you that a Kohen can come into contact with these things. Only a human body can't come into contact with. So how could a Gaon say that? That's why this doesn't really make sense, the version that Rav Schechter has, the Rakefet version, who doesn't mention Gaonim, he just mentions the position. But I'm going to hold off on that till we do the Lieberman classes. It's not really so relevant to us per se here. So what did, this is what Rav Schechter quotes the Rav as saying. I assume the Rav in telling the story over wasn't exact. Maybe that's it. The Rav, the one time he told it one way, the other time he made it to Goni. But here's the punchline. This is what the Rabbi Soloveitchik told to Lieberman. He says that, and my grandfather, Reb Chaim, knew how to learn much better from many of the Goni. Because we're not dealing here with one of the great Goni, like Rav Hai or Rav Shariva or something like that. So you have Lieberman pointing out that you have this strange view of found in the Gaonim, and the Rav says to him, "Well, so what? He's an ignoramus just because he lived in the time of the Gaonim, and my grandfather knew how to learn better than many of these Gaonim." If you look at the Rakefet version, it goes on where he says, he mentions a certain figure who he knew that Lieberman didn't like, and he says, what do you think about him? He goes, oh, he's a boor, he's an Amaretz, he's an ignoramus. So the Rav said, well, you think that only in modern times you have ignoramuses? You had ignoramuses in medieval times too, and or ancient times. And they just, they wrote something. It was, it happened to survive through the vagaries of time, and now you're going to assume that it's something significant. And the Rav said that he didn't, in the Rakefet version, doesn't mention Lieberman, it just mentions a great scholar, that Lieberman thought, yeah, this is a different shita, different view, outlook, different position. And the Rav's outlook was, no, this is just ignorance. We'll see when we do the Lieberman class, we'll go a little more into it, that there's actually, this is in the Dead Sea Scrolls. So it really is a position, a sectarian position. But, so that's the first point. And in my book, booklet, Kuntres, I call it, Saul Lieberman, Your Author, I speak about Rabbi Gifter. Because Rabbi Gifter, if you know something about him, he becomes a Rosh Yeshiva of Tells, he has a reputation as very much on the right wing extreme, attacking YU, although he went to Yeshivas Rabbi Tzelchan, and he was very close to Rabbi Polayev, Rabbi Moshe Aaron Polayev. In the letters they published the letters between Rabbi Gifter and Rabbi Paleoff. Rabbi Gifter says, if they knew he was referring to, I don't think they would have published it. Very bad things about Rabbi Revel. He calls him a director, the red beard, but really very bad stuff about Rabbi Revel. And he never liked, although he loved Rabbi Paleoff and the other Rebbeim, even Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. Rabbi Gifter contributed to the Sefer Yovel, the Jubilee volume, in honor of Soloveitchik. And he mentions here in Shir, he mentions how proud Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was of his son. But Rabbi Gifter had big, big problems with Yeshiva University. That is the way it functioned. So we all know that, and Telz was the most extreme, perhaps, I guess Telz and Lakewood, of the Haredi yeshivas, because you were not permitted to go to university. And all the other ones, Chaim Berlin, Torah Vadas, Mir, they would go to college at night. And Telz, you were not allowed to go. Which is interesting, because in Telz in Europe was considered moderate. They had a gymnasium in Telz, and they had a machina where they did Ivrit Be'Ivrit, and there was a girls' school. Rabbi Shmuel Eleazar Volk, who also comes from Telz, and he was at YU, Rakefet recalls how he used to go thunder, how that's not the real Telz in Cleveland. I knew the real Telz, and he was one of the great Talmidei Chachamim come out of Telz, Shmuel Eleazar Volk. But knowing that Rabbi Gifter was on really the right wing, more the more kanais, extreme element in the Haredi world, I point out that he didn't seem to be that way in his early years, because I discovered in the Jewish Theological Seminary library a group of letters from Rabbi Gifter to Louis Ginsberg. Professor Louis Ginsberg, unlike Lieberman, Louis Ginsberg, no one can call him Orthodox. All you have to do is read his son's book, Eli Ginsberg. He was a huge Talmud Chacham. He may have been the greatest Talmud Chacham in America in 1950, but I fully cognizant of who else was in America then. But he was not what you would call Orthodox. His son, Ginsberg, tells the story that he's with Alexander Marx. Alexander Marx was the librarian, the son-in-law of Rav David C. Hoffman, and he was the librarian at JTS. And they come to Ginsberg's apartment building, and Marx asks him, or is it Ginsberg? I think it was Ginsberg's apartment building. Can we go in the elevator on Shabbos? He went with one of these elevator men, and Ginsberg says, no. So Marx starts walking up the steps. I guess Ginsberg said to him, I'll be up in a minute. And lo and behold, Marx gets up to the floor, fourth floor, fifth floor, whatever it is, and Ginsberg's there waiting for him. So Marx says to Ginsberg, I don't understand. You told me that you can't take the elevator on Shabbos. So Ginsberg says, but I didn't ask the Shaila. So you see, it's a bit of a flippant attitude of Ginsberg, and he would talk on the phone on Shabbos, his son tells us. On the other hand, he wrote tshuvas. He wrote a tshuva on using grape juice during Prohibition, how the issue of can you use grape juice to fulfill, let's say, Pesach, and anything for wine can use grape juice. He also was not happy with mixed seeding in shuls, but he's one of these Iluyim who goes a different path. And yet Rabbi Gifter is writing letters to Louis Ginsberg. He's writing Ha'aros, notes. Ginsberg published a number of volumes, a commentary on the Jerusalem Talmud. And Ginsberg gets this. And Rabbi Gifter gets it, and he writes to him that kept me up all night. He doesn't address him as a Rav HaGaon, but as a Chacham, a Meforsam, all these highfalutin terms for that you would do if you don't want to call someone HaGaon. And he writes pages and pages of comments on Ha'aros, on Ginsberg's commentary. I tell you, if I publish these, which the family might come after me, so I'm not going to. I don't know legally if I can. I could sue me, maybe. But it would really create a problem, because the people who look to Rabbi Gifter as being the kanoi, you see that in his early years, he wasn't such a kanoi. And he was willing to engage in Torah writings with someone whose views he disagreed with. Furthermore, there's other examples of this as well from Rabbi Gifter in his early years. So I point out that this is, I think, interesting, and it seems that Rabbi Gifter changed over time from much more open-minded. He also wrote, for instance, some Mechkar, Jewish academic scholarship. If you look in the early Talpiot, which is published by Yeshiva University, you see letters from articles from Rabbi Gifter there, in which you see he was into the academic sort of stuff. And then he goes a different path. So that was the way I see it, that he changed from his early years to his later years. He moved more into the Frum world and more into just Talmud only. Rabbi Schachter has a different position. He says, regarding Rav Gifter, that perhaps changed his opinion. He says, perhaps you can, he says, Mistama, it makes more sense, he thinks, to give a simple reason that he never thought that these letters would be published. Okay, I don't know. That strikes me as a little not correct. You're going to say that on the one hand, in his public persona, Rav Schachter is saying in his public persona, Rabbi Gifter, and he's related to Rabbi Gifter through marriage, I forget exactly how, in his public persona, he puts out this very extreme Haredi position, but privately he had no problem engaging in correspondence with Louis Ginsburg. Remember, later on, Rabbi Gifter attacks Shaul Lieberman for working at the seminary. And I don't see this as, he sent the letters to Professor Ginsburg. What did he think? That whenever you send a letter, you have to assume that maybe people are going to see it. He was the young rabbi in Waterbury at the time. I don't accept what Rabbi Schachter says, not to mention what I just told you, that he also was quoting scholarship. There's this annual Yeshurin that's put out by these guys in Manhattan and in Israel, these Haredim, and it's a very big annual. It's like 800 pages or 900 pages, and they publish all sorts of stuff from manuscript. And they did a thing on Rabbi Gifter, and they reprinted the stuff from Talpiot. And lo and behold, what do? They censor it. They censor out the various references he has there because pasnished, as we say in Chinese, for a Rosh Yeshiva to cite these sources. And I called him on it. I write about it in Saul Lieberman and the Orthodox. So one of the publishers of the Yeshurin, I ran into him in Jerusalem, and he gave me a smile and says, you caught us. Like, he thinks it's a big joke that I caught them. I don't think it's a joke. I think it's a scandal that they do that. Then he asks me to publish something in Yeshurin, because I have all these manuscripts. And I said to him, how can I publish in Yeshurin? You won't publish an article by Rav Schachter, because that's not considered accepted in the Haredi world. I'm accepted, and Rav Schachter is not accepted. And he says, yeah, but you're not so well known. He represents, I guess in the Haredi world, not so well known. He says, but Rav Schachter represents the YU mentality, YU approach, and therefore we can't publish it. I said, I would never publish in a Torah journal that said to me that Rav Schachter is puzzle, and I'm not puzzle. How can I even do that? How can I? And he said, and he's right, but otherwise you guys have published in it. So for Schachter, he's the problem, because he's like, he's symbolic of Yeshiva University, which is puzzle. So enough with that. And then Rav Schachter says as follows. Just think of the idiocy here. Idiocy. Mark Shapiro is invited to publish for it, and Rav Schachter, he's puzzle. I mean, come on. Olam hafuch ra'isi. An upside turn down world I've seen. So what I did was, I had this, some of the manuscripts, you know where I published it? I published it in Or Yisrael. Or Yisrael was a journal that Rav Schachter is welcome in. It's a Hasidish journal, not like the others. That's Misnagdish. It's a Hasidish journal that, so me and Ramosha Sternbach in the same journal, that's also a bit strange, but I published stuff on, for example, on Esrogim in Corfu manuscripts. And I published a manuscript. I published the Tshuva Mayava, Eliezer Fakos. I did a number of things there. But they also censored something I wrote without telling me. So enough with these people. They don't know the seal of God is truth. I made a reference to an academic journal. They took it out without letting me see it. Problem is, if you have these like Torah, manuscripts, so there aren't many places to put them. Hamayan in Israel, maybe I'll do that from now on. I published a lot of manuscripts there. And then Rabbi Schachter adds one more point. In the Sefer Mipnini Harav, he wrote three volumes of Rav Soloveitchik. I brought what Rabbi Soloveitchik said about Rabbi Leiter and Dr. Freehoff. Well, why is he mentioning this? Because now we're speaking about Rabbi Gifter and his relationship with, let's say, Ginsburg and Shaul Lieberman. So Rabbi Schachter just throws this in. So let me tell you what this is about. First of all, Rabbi Leiter. There's a really, really great, great rabbi, Talmud Chacham in, have a picture of him here in Pittsburgh, name of Zev Wolfleiter. And I just found this online. He's written and wrote a number of svarim. His son on YouTube has a number of videos about his father, Rabbi Zev Leiter, or Wolfleiter. He was in Pittsburgh for many years. He's one of these people who knows everything, citing from the academic scholarship and the Torah literature. Well, there's another rabbi in Pittsburgh. His name was Solomon Freehof. This book I showed you earlier in our classes. Solomon Freehof wrote some great works. He wrote a book called The Responsa Literature, which is to this day is the best introduction to the genre of Sheilot and Tshuvot. And then he wrote a book called Treasury of Responsa, where he translates into English sections of classic Responsa. For example, I think it's the Noda Yehuda's famous Responsa on hunting. Is it permitted to hunt? And all the different, he goes through each century. It's really a very fine work. And then he has about 7 or 8 volumes on Reform Responsa. He's asked questions on halacha, and he answers them back on the understanding that in Reform Judaism, Jewish law has a vote, but not a veto. That's the expression. So he's using sources to try to come up with a Reform answer, understanding that the Talmud and that the Responsa, that these are important works, and they will influence us in our answer. If he had the largest private collection of Responsa, I believe, in America. And after he died, it was given to Hebrew Union College, but a huge, huge collection. But he had a Hebrew Union College background, and he wasn't such a Talmud Chacham. I mean, he wasn't ignorant, but he wasn't such a Talmud Chacham. Well, if you look in the introduction to some of his books, he thanks Rabbi Leiter for helping him. When he had to deal with matters, he was very friendly with Rabbi Leiter, the Reform Rabbi, and the old European Talmud Chacham. They were friendly. Rabbi Leiter would point out to him he's asked a question, where he can find the answer. As I mentioned earlier in our classes, I always found it's incongruous. So Solomon Freehof can have the question, can you use a frozen etrog, which we saw by Rasabi earlier on dealt with. Can you use a frozen etrog? And yet he doesn't even believe in Jewish divorce. A little bit strange. But Rabbi Schachter says that Mipnini Harav, now this is on pages 221 and 222, in the new printing, I added in brackets what page it's on. I should have added the first time. He tells the following story. It says, once in yeshiva, in the middle of the shiur, Rabbi Soloveitchik said, I don't know if my grandfather, Revelvel Soloveitchik, had Ruach HaKodesh. But if he had Ruach HaKodesh, it's certainly with regard to this story. And he says as follows, Talmud Chacham Zokin Me'Europa. There was and I knew who this was referring to before Rav Schachter told me. I simply by this story, I'll tell you I understood who it's referring to, but it doesn't tell you in the book. In the letter to me, it tells you. He says, an elder Talmud Chacham of Europe, who was a rabbi in America, once went to Israel and went to see the Griz, Revelvel Soloveitchik, Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, the famed Brisker Rav. The Rav has a hesped on him, one of the Rav's most famous hespedim, where he really waxes eloquent about the Brisker Derech, is his eulogy for the Brisker Rav. It was this eulogy. First of all, the opponents of Brisk, they speak about, they say, the Torah was not given on Har Grizim, Gimel Reish Yud Zion, the Griz. But this hesped, where the Rav waxed so eloquent and... it seems that he could have, some people took it as if he was a little offensive to the Chazon Ish, because he spoke about that the Brisker Rav was an Ish Emes, completely deaf, and therefore he couldn't meet with Ben-Gurion. But we know that Chazon Ish met with Ben-Gurion. Rabbi David Cohen was at the Hesped, and Rav David Cohen got up and was Moche, he protested, and Rabbi Kefetz told the story many times. He was an eyewitness. And the Rebbetzin Soloveitchik, who was, I guess, sitting on top, screamed down, take him out. And it was David Hartman, who at those days was a real kanoi. He physically took Rav David Cohen and pulled him out and kicked him out of the. And that's the story. And later, Rabbi David Cohen was asked about this, and he says, yes, it was true. And when he went outside, I think it's even in tape, they taped him speaking about this. He called Rabbi Huttner, and Rabbi Huttner said, what you did was correct. I don't even know what he was doing listening to the Rav's drasha, because I know someone who was in Chaim Berlin who said that they were told they're not allowed to go there, or they were told not allowed, but they shouldn't go there. And they did anyway, but they were told not to. So he went to the Griz, and he stretched out his hand to give him shalom, and my uncle refused to speak to him, and even refused to shake hands with him. I'm not sure how the Rav knows the story, but that's what he says. And then the Rav says, perhaps my uncle understood with Ruach HaKodesh that this Talmud Chacham was not worthy of, speaking to him, because it was he who helped HaRabbi Reish Aleph Bet Yud Yud HaReformi Solomon Freehoff to give him all the important stuff so he could write his books in English. And therefore he became a mumcha, in quotes, an expert in this, and he could paskin for the reform movement. So anyone who knows about the history would know that he's referring to Rav Zev Leider, but Rav Schechter he leaves out the name in his book. Interesting story. Okay, I think that's it for today. We'll take the questions. Let me tell you what we're going to see next time, though. We're going to see another letter from Rav Schechter about Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. I sent him the volumes I published on Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, and wait till you see what Rabbi Weinberg says about the Brisker Derech. Oh, actually, sorry, no, that's the next one, about the Brisker Derech. This will hear interesting information. Maybe you will be able to help me, because Rav Schechter mentioned someone who I wasn't able to track down, who knew Rabbi Weinberg very well, and apparently had a whole, from every Shabbos that they were together, kept a Divrei Torah. So I'd love to track that down. I haven't been able to, but now we have a much wider audience. And then we'll see what Rabbi Mazuz also says about this volume, the writings of Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. These are the last letters from Schechter and Mazuz, and that will lead us into what Rabbi Soloveitchik, I don't want to say it because it's not for me to say it, but Rabbi Weinberg says is over the top view of the Brisker Derech. Really, you get over the top in the letter to, in his eulogy for his uncle, namely that only people who do the Brisker Derech are married to the Torah, Nisuin. Everyone else, it's like Kiddushin, but only the Brisker Derech is you're really married to the Torah. Well, then what does that mean about all the Gedolim who didn't do the Brisker Derech or lived before? Well, I'll read you some of the things the Rav says, and wait till you see not only how Rabbi Yechiel Weinberg responds to the Rav, but what he tells us that he told Rav Moshe Soloveitchik about the Brisker Derech. That it's great, but it's not true. And what does that mean? How could something be great if it's not true? And then we'll see, maybe next class we'll get into the big dispute over Rabbi Huda Chassid on the Torah, which Ramosa Feinstein posseled, and what a new figure of Mordechai Spielman, Rabbi Leopold Greenwald. Well, we'll see if we get to that next week. If not, let me make the note where we're stopping. We're stopping on page 342. So let me take the questions and the comments. Here are many questions and comments. David Eisen says that in modern day Israel as well, when a religious Israeli says Leil Shabbat, he or she means Friday night, while a secular Israeli calls it Leil Shishi. And instead of saying Motzei Shabbat, we'll call Saturday night Leil Shabbat. That's the exact point. Thank you, David, that I didn't know that was the case in Israel. The exact point I'm saying, like we would say Thursday night. But in Torah literature, obviously, Leil Shishi is not Friday night. That's Leil Shabbat. Joel asks, where's the article about waving a vegot? That's Chakira. You can see it online, chakira.org. That's one of the ones. It's the most recent issue, but some of them are available online and others, they wait till the next issue comes out. That one you can see, at least when I downloaded it, you can see it. As I said, an article which raises issues I never, ever before thought of. Also, you want to look in the Chakira because they have my letter to the editor. I will tell you right now if they have... let's see, view current issue. Is it the current issue? Yes, you can see it. And you can see the letters to the editor. You will see my letter to the editor if you're interested as well. there was a complete distortion of the responsum, and I set the record straight, Baruch Hashem. Oh, David says that the, hold on a second, I don't have my glass, the, in Birkas Ilanos, the bracha is, I said chiser, it's actually chisar. Let me, I don't have, didn't have my magnifying glass here, and so let me tell you right now, I take out my magnifying glass, what it should be, and I thank you very much if that is correct. You know what? I can't. Here it is. Okay. You're right. Sorry, Chisar. Exactly. Thank you for that. Shlomo Fox. Is it Ashrei? Let me see. Is it Ashrei or Asheri? I looked quickly at the. No, it's Ashrei. The translation. The person who privately emailed me, it's Shlomo Fox Ashrei, not Asheri. Joel says, we do say Baal Tefillah, but Baal Kori. So the guy in my shul, he's changed it now. So we all say Baal Kriya, Baal Tekiya. Okay, thank you for those who've emailed me privately. David Eiden says, I've heard Rabbi Kefet tell the story numerous times, and each time Rabbi Kefet also said Rabbi Lieberman quoted a manuscript of the Gaonim found in the Cairo Geniza. So the problem is that I was just writing this up. If you look at what he writes in his... if you look in... what he's writing in the book, The Rav, he says that the person he discussed said, he told me they discovered a parchment, a Megillah, in which it was stated, and I'm reading from Shama Friedman's thing here, in which then there's three dots. So it could have said a parchment, a Megillah from the Cairo Geniza, but I'm not sure if it says that. But it's not. I can just tell you that it's not from the Cairo Geniza. And you'd have to look. I'll look when I do the prepare the Lieberman. I made a note for myself tomorrow when I go to Scranton. I don't have the book Durov with me. It's at my university. I'll see if he mentions the Geniza there. But we'll see. Shama Friedman shows that this is actually a shita. It's not ignorance. It's a shita, but it's a shita in the Cairo in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Rabbi Kel. No, not Rabbi Kelman. Let's see. Someone mentions that that Rav Schechter quotes Shaul Lieberman when it comes to women's smicha. Yeah, I'll get to that. Next, when I do with the classes on Shaul Lieberman. David Eisen says, Rav Gifter has a BS from Yeshiva College. He was a math major. Yes, he finished. However, Rabbi the Kamenetz Rosh Yeshiva, who also was in Yeshiva College, why can't I remember the name now? Well, he just passed away. He was only there. He was from Pittsburgh. And also, I don't know if he I don't know if he knew Rabbi Freehoff, but he was in Yeshiva College. Someone will write it in. The one who just passed away for 2 years, he was at Yeshiva College. He never got a degree. You said Scratchley wrote about Rav Gifter. I don't think he ever got a degree. He was there at Yeshiva. He was there, Yeshiva Shiritz Al-Khanan. He went for the high school, and then he stayed, I think, a little bit, and then he went. He was not in the college more than a year or so, as far as I know, if even that. He might have just been learning at Yeshiva Shiritz Al-Khanan. Baruch says, how many years ago was that? Oh, this is this was after Lieberman came out, so that was in 2004, something like that. Yeah, I shouldn't characterize Yeshurun as misnagdish. It's not completely Hasidic as the other one is. Maybe the other one isn't either. By the way, I'll tell you, Baruch, you can contact me privately if you want. Last week, Mel says, Rabbi Rakefet praised Rabbi Freehoff's book as an excellent introduction to responsa literature. Unfortunately, it hasn't been reprinted, but I highly recommend it. Anyone who wants to know, I got it in my own copy on AB Books. You can get it maybe on Amazon. For an introduction to the responsa literature, his book, The Responsa Literature, is just, it's wonderful. You got to praise if it is. David Eisen says that Roy Hartman was a Kanai, but also quite an athlete on the YU basketball team. Okay, I did not know that. Why were the Chaim Berlin students prohibited from going to hear the Hesped the Rav delivered? The same reason why the Torah Vadas and the others, that they didn't want them to go. What I heard from someone is that the guys would go, you didn't ask. If you asked, they would tell you not to go, but you didn't ask. And I heard from Nelson Kamenetsky that his father once made a comment that if you go there, you don't know if you're going to get Heidelberg. Really, it should have been Berlin. Or Reb Chaim, because, you know, the Agadic section, the first part, there's two hours or so of just Torah. But then after that, there's Agada, and the Agadic stuff, they were always, in the yeshiva world, were always skeptical of, and his hashkafa as well. If you're going to go there, Yaakov, if you can go hear the Rav, and he was the greatest darshan of his time, and there's no one could give, you know, public shirim like him. Well, then your next thing you're going to do is you're going to say, well, shouldn't we go to YU to learn with the Rav? The whole idea was in the Haredi world, you weren't supposed to go there. And you want to prevent them from the Yetzer Hara of going to learn with the Rav. Although the public shiurim were such events, standing room only sort of thing. Barry Hartman, this was 1960, the YU, the Hespedim for Rav Yisrael Meltzer, the Chazon Ish, and the Brisker Rav. People who were there told me the Rav concentrated on the Brisker Rav. And was no disrespect to the Chazon Ish Rav Yisrael Zalman or Varon Cutler spoke there. Okay, well, some of this, Barry, can't be true because Rav Yisrael Zalman and the Chazon Ish were 6 years before that. And Rav Varon Cutler definitely didn't speak at Yeshiva's Rav Yitzchak Elkanan. Rav Varon Cutler, when he first comes to America, he went to Yeshiva's Rav Yitzchak Elkanan to use the library. As far as I know, he never even gave a shiur there, but Rav Varon Cutler never spoke in a public talk. Like that at YU. What he did speak is he spoke for the RCA, but not at Yeshiva College, Yeshiva University. Mel says they are prohibited in going to hear the Rav in general, but I would only add to that, Mel, the prohibited is in quotes. It wasn't like a prohibition that if you go, you're going to be thrown out or anything. They let them students know that they wouldn't want them, but they didn't. It's sort of like in Europe when the Zionists or Rav Reines would come to town. Well, the Yeshiva Bachar would go hear Rav Reines or the Tzioni preacher or something like that. It wasn't like an absolute prohibition that they'd be annoyed. That's the way it was explained to me from people in the time, that they would be annoyed if you went. Maybe there was also an element of like, why are you going to hear JB? You can hear us. What's so special about him? Remember, the whole in the yeshiva world, that's how they referred to him. That became the term he was used also as a way of putting him down, JB. Rav Schechter said, I guess I could repeat this. He said as follows, because he didn't mean it disrespectfully. He just wanted to give them a taste of their medicine. There was a summer when they would go, while you guys in those days would go learn in Lakewood in the summer, like in the late 50s. And I think it was only one summer that Rav Schechter went, and someone referred to the Rav as JB. And Rav Schechter says, well, why don't we ask then AK or something like that? And don't you see how disrespectful that sounds? Well, then how do you think it sounds when you say it? So he wasn't saying it to be disrespectful. He just was telling it because for him, for this guy, Rav Aaron Cutler is Gadol Shmigdolim. You say AK, it's obviously the most disrespectful thing you can say. So obviously for someone like Rav Schechter, he wasn't Rav Schechter then, he was Herschel. For someone like that to hear you say JB, you know, about his Rebbe, it's...
Mark, the truth about it, I remember him telling us that story in Shear about they're going to Lakewood. But if my memory serves me correct, he wasn't the one who said it. He mentioned who was, I don't want to mention his name. He mentioned that his son was in the Shear, I think, with us. So he said, okay. Your father went, and your father said, AK, as long as they call him JB, we'll call him AK. And eventually he said they threw them out. That's how Rav Schechter told the story. They threw them out of Lakewood.
Well, I recalled the story. I didn't hear it from him personally. But that must be the correct story. I heard it from someone else.
I heard it in Shear. He mentioned this.
Okay, well, thank you. I think what probably happened then is that the person who told the story, and I have to remember who it was, assumed that Rav Schechter was speaking about himself but wouldn't say it because he said a Talmud Chacham among us said it, and he might have assumed that it was Rav Schechter, speaking about himself, but didn't want to say it. But
Okay.
Barry says Yitzhak Shiner. Yes, Yitzhak Shiner just passed away, very elderly. David Eisen says that Roshoma Brody uploaded his article on his Academia EDU page. Yeah, but you can get also on Chakira. Roshoma Brody wrote every week for a while this column in the Jerusalem Post, Halacha Questions. He's a very learned person. He wrote his senior thesis at Harvard on the Maritz Chayas, for Tzvi Hirsch Chayas. And my daughter, even now, she's in America. She came back, but today she did the Tikva thing. She was online, the Tikva thing in Israel. He's doing very good work there. And finally, Baruch says, as I heard understood, someone was pestering Reshechter, asking repeatedly, "Nu, what does JB say about this? What does JB?" And after a while, to get rid of the guy, he said, "And what does AK say about this?" Okay, again, that's the story of the story I heard. But we have a Dusne Mana from Rav Kelman that, unless it's the other way, unless it was Rav Schechter who said it, but he didn't want to reveal it, I don't know. But it wasn't being meant disrespectfully the way I heard it. It was just to show that this is what it sounds like if you disrespect Gadol Yisrael. And finally, the last point, Joel asks, the article about Rabbi and Hebrew Rav. I'm not sure what you're referring to.
You had mentioned that there was, you had shown us an article that said that there's a distinction in using Rabbi as opposed to using Rav.
Oh, well, I just, for example, I just quoted Rav Schechter when he quotes Freehoff. If you look at Ramosha finds his Ibaros Moshe, if you're referring to.
I was wondering where the article might have been.
No, I don't recall it saying an article per se.
You showed it.
I showed you an article?
Yeah.
The use of, no, not about the use of Rabbi and Rav. If someone thinks, remember what it's referring to, you can tell me. I'll just end with the point that if you look in Igros Moshe, the Igros Moshe is interesting for many reasons, but he didn't know a lot of the new Hebrew words. So for example, sometimes you struggle, you see a word, and you have to figure out he's saying car. So like, how does he spell? Like kuf alef resh resh instead of mechonit. So you hear all these English words put into Hebrew. But also that was the first time I ever saw the usage rabbi. Resh, like aleph, how does he write it? Bet yud yud. Because you don't want to call the non-Orthodox rabbis, you can't call them Rav because Rav is a proper title. But you want to show who you're speaking about, so you call them rabbi. And you find that always in Igros Moshe. You don't find that in the earlier sources. The earlier sources say things like rabbanim, resh ayin, banim. They use various terms to negative terms, playing on it. But Rav Moshe simply says, you know, rabbi. So a real rabbi is a rav, and a not real rabbi is a rabbi. I'm really not sure, Joel, what you're referring to, because I don't know of any article that deals with rabbi and rav. So you must be referring to something. And when you say it, or someone says it, it'll hit me and I don't know what it's talking about. Sorry. Okay, Rabbi Kelman.
Of course, the rabbi rav only works in English. I mean, in Israel, it wouldn't work.
You know? You'd write resh aleph bet yod like Rav Moshe did.
No, but that's because in America, we call our rabbis like rabbis. But in Israel, nobody's called a rabbi in Israel.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, you're right.
I don't know. I'm just going to, you know, whatever. Yeah, people get hung up on these things.
Yeah.
Titles become important. Okay, thank you very much. Look forward to next week. Tomorrow, Ora Wiskind on her class on Chassidut. Everybody's welcome at 11 a.m. in the morning. Followed at 1:30 on Megillat Rut by Ilana Goldstein. Sachs. So we welcome you tomorrow. A triple header on Wednesday, of course, Marty Lakshin in the morning on the Medrash Pshatan Halacha, followed by Lori Novick on Women in Kriyat HaTorah and Dr. Sokolo on the Haftar of the Week. And Thursday, Shuli Mishkin in the morning, Rebecca Winter from Atlanta giving the Parsha Shir, and the Friday morning Pirkei Avot by yours truly at 9:30. And that's the rest of this week. And we look forward to hope everybody's doing well and enjoying the weather's getting a little bit nicer, I think, in a lot of parts of the East Coast. We had some nice days recently. So enjoy the weather. Go for a walk. That's about what we can do here. You can enjoy the restaurants and all the other things. And when are they opening up like hockey arenas and stuff? Are they going to open like Madison Square Garden? For
already
the
open. Come on.
Really? Is Yankee Stadium, though? I haven't really been following. Yeah. Can you go to a game in Yankee Stadium?
The number is limited, but I think Madison Square Garden is now allowing 3,000 fans, up from
20%
capacity. If you go to Florida, it's Florida's full capacity, right? Texas and Florida is probably full capacity.
No, I'm saying our Toronto sports teams can't even play in Toronto except hockey, but they have no fans. Only the hockey teams. There's a whole Canadian division. They don't go north of the border, south of the border, whatever. But our hockey, our basketball and baseball team is their second season playing out of Toronto.
You should think, Rabbi Kalman, give us a little Dvar Torah maybe next time. Do you say a bracha, a shechayanu, or vaccine?
When I got AstraZeneca, which is what I got, I made a shechayanu. I looked before there was a whole discussion. Asked my nephew, who's a shtickle Talmud Chacham, I asked him what he thought. So he made a tova meitiv. Different people make. I know there was a whole discussion, and people said both. I don't know. I just feel, even though tova meitiv is when it benefits others, which is for sure true in the vaccine. Mm-hmm. Shechayanu just sort of rings more, we're more comfortable with it, whatever. So I know the different, the what I saw, I didn't examine it for hours and hours on end, but I made a Shechayanu. I think for sure you should make a bracha when you get a vaccine. I don't
know.
I'm maybe people, I don't know. Are people in America not making brachot? What are people?
I don't think so.
Interesting.
It's like the Gemara says, Avid Kamar, Avid Kamar, Kamar Avid. Whatever you
do. I hear. Of course, I'm not. But to me, it was just, yeah, of course I'm going to make a bracha. And then I just had to figure out. And the few people I talked to here, you know, who are learned, you know, so that's what they did. So they made brachas, but okay.
Maybe because there's much less vaccine in Canada.
Yeah, right. It could be. It's a bigger deal here, right? The Slorola was much slower. Yeah, 100%. Like the Rav on Tfilat HaDerech. If you're not nervous, you don't say Tfilat HaDerech. Yeah. You do. So, yeah.
Okay. Good night, everyone.
All right. Tov, everybody. Yeah. Thanks. We should hear good news. Besorah Tovah for everybody. Okay. Be well.